On Sunday, January 21st at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl prepares for the Grammy Awards by featuring composer, vocalist, and nominee for Best Jazz Vocal Album, A Social Call, Jasmia Horn. Join us as we spend time with this very original artist. That's Sunday, January 21st at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
In the morning, find me more. I want a little sugar in my bowl. I want a little sweetness down in my soul. I could stand some loving, oh, so bad. I feel so funny, I feel so sad. I want a little steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I need some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar in my bowl.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name is Joyce Jones. Our guest for this evening, in recognition of the upcoming 2018 Grammys, we're featuring composer, vocalist, and Best Jazz Vocal Grammy nominee for A Social Call, Jasmia Horn. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl, starting now.
I want some steam on my clothes. Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on, save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I want some sugar in my bowl.
Happy to pass your doorway, gave you a buzz, that's all. Lately I've thought lots about us, so I thought I'd pay a social call. Do you recall the old days? To have a ball. Not that we're nothing without them. I just thought I'd pay a social call. I'd lie and say things are just swell. But to tell the truth, we haven't been too well. And if we should try to love, we know that we won't fall. Maybe we'll get back together, starting from this incidental elemental simple social call. Happy to pass your doorway, gave you a buzz, that's all. Lately I thought life's about us, I thought I'd pay a social call. Do you recall the old days, we used to have a ball? Now there were nothing without them, I just thought I'd pay. But to tell the truth, we haven't been too well. And if we should try to love, we know that we won't fall. Maybe
outgoing message on your voicemail?
The only thing is that I don't have it copywritten yet.
Oh, okay. Never mind then.
That would be great. I should definitely do it.
Get on that. Have other people ask you?
Yeah.
See? Now that's why you need to have had it done.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. Harold Mayburn, the pianist.
Of course.
He has an outgoing message. It's this lovely tune that eventually wound up being something on his release. As we were talking, he said, oh, I should do something with that. And his next release included that song.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to record it. I actually brought a whole tune.
Oh.
That's just a snippet of it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually called The Voicemail Blues.
Yes, you did say that.
So I'm excited. That's really cool. It's definitely going to be on the next album.
Hi, my name's Joyce Jones. I'm on the line with...
I am Jasmia Horn.
Jasmia Horn, thank you so much for joining Sugar in My Bowl. I really appreciate the time you're going to spend with us.
Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on your Grammy nomination.
Hey, thank you.
Are you still on this Grammy-like promotional tour of sorts? You were recording Grammy-related video, and you wound up being on the Tavis Smiley Show.
Absolutely. So there's been a lot of stuff like that that's come up. The Grammy Recording Academy contacted us and asked if we could do a video so that they can put on their website as a first-time Grammy nominee. And then also something with Delta Airlines. Delta Airlines actually sponsors the first-time Grammy nominees.
Oh, wow.
And I was able to do something with them as well. We just did, like, a commercial type of thing for Delta. And then there was a Tavis Smiley Show. Yeah, so a lot of great things have been coming up because of this Grammy nomination. I'm really excited about that.
Tell me about the band that was with you during the Tavis Smiley presentation.
So those guys, all of them were native musicians of the California area. They were local artists. And Richard Turner, the pianist, he and I played together with Theo Croker for a Christmas program that I did about 3 or 4 years ago. So maybe 3 years ago, because it was right after I won the Mont competition. Probably like 2 years ago, actually. Time is going by so fast for me. It feels like 4 or 5 years, but it's only been probably 2. And I really enjoyed his playing. And so I called Richard Turner when I was in California and asked him if he knew of any musicians that would be interested in playing with me for the Tavis Smiley Show. And then we did the show that day. And then the next day we performed at the Blue Well. And it was really fun. Yeah, we had a good time, and the crowd was great. Tavis Smiley actually came out to the show and brought some friends as well, which was really, really good.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Your band.
You want to watch Little Bill or Rasta Mouse?
Watch the Mouse.
Rasta Mouse, okay. Little Bill? You want to watch Little Bill?
Uh-oh.
How about we watch Rasta Mouse first, then Little Bill, we can watch that as soon as Rasta Mouse over, okay?
Okay.
That's wonderful. Is that a series, Rasta Mouse?
Yeah, I don't let them watch things that are created by African people just because they need to see African people in African shows and people that look and sound like them. The series based in Montego Bay, but they call it Mousetego Bay. And it's about a mouse. His name is Rasta Mouse, and he just saves the day. That's his job. He has a little crew called Easy Crew, and he's a lead guitarist in the band, and there's Mixie Mouse, who plays the bass, and then there's Toots, who plays the bongos.
Oh!
They go around on their skateboards and their rollerblades, and they save the day. And if the President Wensleydale calls and says something happened, they have to go solve the mystery. If somebody does something bad, they don't send them to prison or jail. Just make them do something good for the community. So that's pretty much what the whole cartoon is about. And all
like
the characters
that.
Look like black people.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Where did that come from, by the way? Is it based out of Jamaica, or is it an American thing?
An African American created it probably like 4 years ago, and I was just searching on YouTube one day. I just put Haitian culture cartoons, Swahili cartoons for African Americans, cartoons for black children. I just found all these different things for black children, and then I actually started Googling, and I found other stuff. You know, I just started doing research because I really don't want her to watch too much of like the Elmo's World and stuff like that, because it's still programming if you really think about it. I started off with just my eye. My children don't have to watch what's being put on television. We don't even have a TV. It's perfect.
Good on you.
Diddly, for a while I tripped a bit, little, do diddle do do do, hey, hot the baby do, but oh, I don't know where my man is, where can he be? What is he doing? I've been asking questions all over town, hoping to be found. I'm on the loose, I don't dig it. Take my advice. If you find a man, hold on tight. Don't let him, don't let him, don't let him, don't let him. Hold on to him tight, don't let him go.
Musicians that were included on A Social Call, were they all your choosing because you worked around town with them?
Yes. With A Social Call, I didn't only want to bridge the gap between the elders and the youth within the community or globally with the music. I wanted to do it with the persons as well. So the perspective, if you want to bridge the gap, you don't just say, oh, I'm going to do this from my generation. Like, you know, anything in life, if you want to get someone else's perspective, if you have a goal, a vision about someone else who is not you. For instance, I am not younger than myself, and I'm not older than myself. So I have to go to the elders and ask them what they need and what their perspective is. And I also have to go to the youth and ask them what they need and see their perspective, too. So that's what I did with the musicians. Frank Lacey being the eldest musician on trombone, and he's one of the elders. And so I reached out to him so that we could have his perspective on the album. And then I'm the youngest person, but I'm also going into the communities, and I also have children. So it was like reaching over into a different place to bring different age groups together. Victor Gould, the pianist, and I are the same age.
And he's a parent. He's a father.
And he is also a father. That's correct. Ben Williams, he's in his mid-30s, you know, on bass. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jerome Jennings on drums. He's also in his, you know, late 30s, early 40s. And Josh Evans on trumpet and Stacey Dillard on tenor saxophone. Right. It was just a mixing of different generations just to bring the whole A Social Call together, because that's really what it's about, is bridging that gap and bringing us all together. I wanted to do that in many ways that I possibly could. So that was the grouping of those musicians.
Someone says, how are you? What I want to say is, well, considering the world is run by corrupt leaders, our food is being poisoned, the meat industry has become a holocaust, the atmosphere is being sprayed with chemicals, pesticides, and poisons, racism still exists on a high level and is still an issue. There are people dying in the world from starvation and police brutality. While we waste enough food to feed them, bombs, homeless, crime, prisons, junk food, debt, miseducation, pollution, poverty. speaking, I would say I'm pretty concerned right now. But I just smile and say, I'm fine.
plus, the rhythm section, what better rhythm section can you have than, especially bassists, Ben Williams and Jerome Jennings? Mm-hmm. They play together outside of playing with me, and it's just phenomenal. And Victor and I have been playing since he moved to New York in 2011. Yeah, his sister and I went to high school together. And when we graduated, she said, where are you going? I said, new school, where are you going? She said, I'm going to Berkeley. Mm-hmm. She's like, but you know, my brother's in New York. He's going to be in New York. You should connect with him and play with him. And I didn't listen. And months passed, and I needed a piano player. And I called him. And I never called anybody else because he just did what I needed him to do. He was very focused. Yes. He was very mature. Very timely. He listened. He didn't treat me like, you know, during that time, the average musician was treating me like, well, what key do you do this in? Well, you know, they had an attitude about wanting to play with me. Mm. And Victor didn't have that. He was very calm and collective. He was very professional. And it just worked out. I really liked what he was hearing and how he was listening and staying out of the way, not dominating over what I was playing.
Right.
And his personality is also like that, too. So we just have that chemistry, and I don't see myself playing with anybody else with Victor because he just makes him so comfortable. If you listen to the Peacocks on the album.
Yes!
Pathways far descending to the garden far below us, the pavilions in the sunlight, where the peacocks proudly grace the sea. A vision, a timeless place, another way of living. You moved in so close, I really thought that you were giving. Mirage is all it's ever.
I still hear the ringing of a church bell in the morning, the peacocks still calling out their sad and bitter warning. Take a final look around you, hold the memory forever, find a quiet place inside where you can listen to what all your heart is saying. Beauty's only an illusion. Hear your truth is an intrusion. A mirage is a
it's a conversation.
Yes.
It's hard for me to have conversations with other musicians in that way,
mm-hmm.
Especially pianists. It's been difficult. And Victor just gets it. So it's been beautiful. Yeah.
I know. When I've seen you live, Victor is there. There's another constant, I guess, Henry Conaway III,
yes.
On drums. He seems to be a regular member of your working band.
Yes, absolutely. So the working band comprises of Victor Gould, Barry Stevenson on bass, and
yes.
Henry Conaway III on drum set. Barry Stevenson and I did the Betty Carter Jazz Ahead program in 2013 before I won the Sarah Vaughan competition.
Okay.
And we got a chance to play with people like Carmen Lundy, was there as the vocal instructor.
Yes.
And Dwayne Bruno was there.
The bassist, yes.
The bassist. Mm-hmm. As the pianist, the director of the program now is actually Jason Moran. Yeah, it was Dr. Billy Taylor, but when Dr. Taylor passed, they passed it over to Jason Moran. Not only a jazz music at the Kennedy Center, but he's the director of the Jazz Ahead Betty Carter program. And that's how Barry and I met, and we've been playing ever since then. He went on to marry and was getting ready to have a child and things of that nature, so he's family to me. And Henry Conaway moved to New York about 2 years ago, and Noah Jackson is somebody who was regular in my band.
Yes.
Before Barry. Yeah. And so Noah was like, yeah, you should really check out my friend Henry. He's from Detroit, and we grew up together, and we played together on the scene a lot, and he's like family to me. You would really like him. And that after that first day, I just kept calling. It was the same with Victor.
Mm-hmm.
It was the same type of connection. After that first time we had played together, I just continued to call him because the chemistry was there. You know, these people have really kindred spirits, and they have ancient spirits. So it's not just about how they play. It's about how they respect the music, because the music is first, even before jazz music, even before me as the boss. You
mm-hmm.
have to have a certain respect, honor, reverence to the music in order for me to want to even play with you. And that's what these men have. And it's hard to come by that. And I have so much respect for them in the way that they honor the music. And then they also show up on time.
Hey.
You know, and I don't have to tell them to pull up your pants and tuck in your shirt and don't wear jeans and don't wear sneakers to the concerts. They're very professional.
Yes.
They're very professional black men.
Yes.
And that's why we work together, because they're professionals and they play well and they respect the music and they respect me as a woman, as their leader. And I appreciate them for that.
Uh-huh.
We don't have fights. No malice or animosity in my band.
Yes.
I'm really grateful for that. It's hard to come by. So
well, I'm actually not surprised.
I don't take you guys for granted.
I'm not surprised because that isn't the energy that you put out. So the good stuff you're putting out comes back to you in your band.
Yes.
In all walks
that's
of life. Right. So that's, you know.
I say that's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned Noah Jackson. He's played bass with you.
When he was at Manhattan School of Music, I was at the New School. He was doing his graduate degree and I was doing my undergrad. And I met him on the scene, just like I met the rest of these guys. And Noah, I really liked. We actually played with Bernard Harper a lot
okay.
for a long time before he even segued into my band, I ended up calling him for a couple of things because the bassist that I was using at the time wasn't available. And so things happened. Like, for instance, I remember calling Noah because Eric Wheeler was somebody who was constantly playing in my band. But Dee Dee Bridgewater heard him one day and was like, oh, I love this brother. And he went on the road with her.
Okay.
And so you just have to call somebody else. And
right.
And you get excited for those people. You know, I was excited for Eric because he deserves to be playing with Dee Dee Bridgewater. He's
exactly.
that great. So I had to let him go and find someone else. And I was happy because when he's not playing with Dee Dee, he'll say, Jazz, I'm in town. I'm off the road with Dee Dee. And if you need me, I'm still available and I'm still here. You know, it's a family.
Beautiful.
It's very family oriented. I'm always happy when I see these brothers go and play with other artists who are of a greater experience, who are elders in the community. I'm excited for them and the elder because it's the social call. Everybody needs to be with each other. We don't need to be separated by age or sex or whatever. You know, it's beautiful.
The reason why I keep harping on Noah Jackson, it sort of brings me to a presentation that you did at the Harlem State Office Building. Viola Plummer, the December 12th movement, was there.
Yes.
And you were the featured artist. There were poets, and actually I was part of a drum ensemble that opened the festivities.
Yes.
So how did you become connected to or wind up doing things with Viola Plummer / Sister's Place, I guess?
So Winai Harper heard me perform, I think at the Zinc Bar or Minton's Jam Session or Small, somewhere when I was playing and he heard me play and he said, you have a voice on you. Would you like to sing with us? You know, are you available? Are you free? What does your schedule look like? And I was like, are you kidding me? Absolutely. You know, I was like 18, 19, 20 years old and I was getting the opportunity to play with Winai Harper just by going and singing at a jam session on the scene. And he had Sister's Place. They love Winai Harper. They love a lot of the musicians who don't really get much recognition in the mainstream,
right.
And that's what they're really good for, and I appreciate them for that. You know, Charles Tolliver, Vanessa Rubin, a bunch of different musicians who I really love and have grew up listening to their music, and Winai Harper was one of those people, and, you know, he asked me to sing with him at Sister's Place. And when I sang, Viola Plummer and Sister Colette Peen, they were both like, you have an ancient soul and you're so young, but this big sound and this vibrant sound is coming out of you. Welcome, come. Where did you come from? We are going to adopt you as a Brooklyn musician, even though you're from Dallas. You're one of us now. Welcome to our family. If you need anything, call us. If we're doing anything, come by. Come and march with us. Come hang with us. You know, a social call, essentially. And from there, it just went on. Every time they had an event and I was in Brooklyn, I was there. Even when I wasn't in Brooklyn, because I was living in Harlem at the time, I would just go out and see what they had to say and hear what they had to give, and essentially they just became part of my family, and Winai Harper is who I have to thank for that, and it was beautiful.
Excellent.
She's beyond words in many ways. Very talented. She's from Dallas, Texas, and very, very proud to have her here with us. And I'm sure you'll be excited about it as we are. Please, a wonderful, wonderful round of applause for Miss Jasmia Horn. And we're also going to invite to the bandstand a very talented young man that's been working with us from Tokyo, Japan. And also very proud to have him with us. Please, a wonderful, wonderful round of applause. And very talented Mr. Tada Uno.
Thank you.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar My Bowl's the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and our guest for this evening is Jasmia Horn, Grammy nominee for A Social Call. What you're listening to in the background is from a YouTube clip, because apparently they didn't record together. Winard Harper's Jelly Posse, featuring Jasmia Horn. This is a live performance from the Jazz Standard. The selection is Motherless Child. Winard Harper on drums, Jasmia Horn vocals, Tadataka Uno on piano, Noah Jackson on bass, Jonathan Bechet on tenor saxophone, Jovan Alexander also on tenor saxophone, Bruce Harris on trumpet, and Delfeo Marsalis on trombone. Before that, we heard several selections from A Social Call, the Grammy-nominated release, The Peacocks, A Timeless Place. A Social Call is a 2017 Prestige Records release. Jasmia Horn on vocals, Victor Gould on piano, Josh Evans on trumpet. Before that, we heard People Make the World Go Round, also from A Social Call. They have Jasmia Horn on vocals, Victor Gould on piano, Ben Williams on acoustic bass, Jerome Jennings on drums and percussion, Goomba Frank Lacey on trombone, Stacy Dillard on tenor saxophone, and Josh Evans on trumpet. Before that, we have another selection from A Social Call, Betty Carter's Tight, Jasmia Horn on vocals, Victor Gould on piano, Ben Williams on acoustic bass, Jerome Jennings on drums and percussion, Stacy Dillard on tenor saxophone. And before that, we heard from Harold Mayburn, former Sugar guest, his Blues for Frank and Paul and All from his Right on Time release. That's a 2014 Smoke Session Records. Harold Mayburn on piano. He's also the composer. John Weber Jr. on bass and Joe Farnsworth on drums. Before that, we heard Harold Mayburn's outgoing voicemail message that inspired this release. Before that, we heard Social Call from Jasmia Horn's A Social Call. Before that, we heard our theme, I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, from Nina Simone, the very best of Nina Simone, Sugar in My Bowl, 1967-1972. Originally recorded in 1967, this selection is from a 1998 RCA BMG compilation. Stay tuned for our On the Bandstand segment with our associate producer Hank Williams, and more Sugar in My Bowl with Jasmia Horn, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Sugar in My Bowl continues.
Yeah. Mr. Delphio Marcellus, trombone. Mr. Jonathan Pachet, tenor saxophone. Mr. Jovan Alexander.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for January 21st. This segment features aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can see them live. This week's show focuses on vocalist Jasmia Horn, whose A Social Call album has been nominated for 2018 Grammy Award. She'll be at the Jazz Standard from March 1st through 4th, and we have more listings for you this week. We start with bassist Linda Mahano, who's at the Jazz Gallery with Jonathan Blake's trio on January 22nd. Saxophonist Salim Washington is at the Jazz Gallery on the 25th. Vocalist Lisa Fisher is at the Blue Note with Talib Kweli on the 25th. Saxophonist Kenny Garrett is at the Blue Note with Talib Kweli on the 28th. Drummer Terry Lynn Carrington is at the Stones Lower East Side location on the 28th. Looking a little further ahead, Professor Farah Jasmine Griffin and poet Quincy Troop are at the Schomburg Library on the 30th for a talk on James Baldwin and Miles Davis. Pianist David Videas leads Nosotros at the Jazz Standard on the 30th and 31st. Saxophonist David Murray leads the Infinity Quartet at Birdland from the 31st through February 3rd. Drummer Francisco Mora Catlett is at Brooklyn Sisters Place on the 3rd with Afrohorn. Vocalist Diane Reeves is at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Rose Theater on the 9th and 10th. Percussionist Steve Kroon leads a sextet at Brooklyn Sisters Place on the 10th. Finally, saxophonist James Brandon Lewis is at the Zurcher Gallery on the Lower East Side with pianist D.D. Jackson on February 13th. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, full listings are on our blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog, where you'll also find reviews, features, and jazz news. And Sugar is spelled S-U-G-A. Playlists and audio from this and previous shows are also on the website. If you're on Twitter and Facebook, look for us there too, where we'd appreciate likes, tweets, and shares with your friends. If you really like what we do, you can help the station stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. The Support WBAI link on our website has details, and we're grateful for any help you can give the station. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our bi-weekly schedule, we're off the air next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on air on February 4th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
And speaking of supporting WBAI, you could find out more about relieving WBAI of its $60,000 monthly Empire State Building rent. This could happen if WBAI formed a partnership with the nonprofit Manhattan Neighborhood Network, MNN. To learn more, come out with producers and other listeners on Saturday, February 10th from 3 to 6 p.m. at MNN's Firehouse Studio, 175 East 104th Street, between 3rd and Lexington Avenue. In East Harlem. That's Saturday, February 10th from 3 to 6 p.m. Visit savewbai.org. That's savewbai.org.
You're tuned to WBAI, the station that tells our story and tells it like it is. This is Mabel Williams, widow of Robert F. Williams, Negroes with Guns, and you're listening to WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM.
And I mean every word of it.
Above my head, I hear music in the air. A up above my head, there's a melody so bright and fair I can hear when I'm all alone, even in those times when I feel all hope is gone. Up above my head, I hear joy bells ringing. Up above my God somewhere, there must be a God somewhere. Up above my head, I hear music in the air. Up above my head, there's a melody so bright. Up above my head, I hear joy bells ringing. There must be a God somewhere. There must be a God somewhere. La da da, la da 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 da, la da 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 da, la da 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 da, da 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 da.
By now, folks have probably heard you share that your grandfather is a pastor, and you were singing in church in Dallas. So would you mind sharing some of that experience of your being in that church? How old were you, and how often were you singing and that sort of thing?
When I came from the hospital, probably 6 weeks old, that was the church I don't even remember that far back in my life. The youngest I remember is being 2 years old. So, but my mother and my grandmother told me that's where I was christened from the moment I came home from the hospital and I was able to go out into the world. I was in that church. I sang in the choir starting at 3 years old. I was on the usher board team, the youth usher board team when I was like six. I was a Sunday school teacher when I left the nest, like when I finally left Dallas and came to New York. When I came back home over the summer, they made me a Sunday school teacher because in Sunday school, in that church, they teach Black history. My grandfather was firm in what he believed in. He believed in community. He was still a Garveyite. He definitely believed in Christ, but he also believed in consciousness and making sure that the people knew about our people. He had a way of bringing different, if the young men in the church were interested in basketball, he would bring in articles from the news from certain basketball players, be they good or bad. And if somebody was, like, let's say the NFL football player Michael Vick, who was fighting his dog, you know, he would speak out out about it, and he would say, this is what we need to do, and this is what we need to not do. We can learn from this, but we can also grow from this. He would bring it into Sunday school. That was the reason why I kind of got my love and my pro-me, pro-African stance from growing up in a church where people were liberated. They weren't just sitting down and not doing anything. Every second and fourth Saturdays, we would have car washes for the youth, and all of the men would go out and wash cars, and they would learn about the different parts of the car and how to start the car and how to wash the car and how to clean it and what to use to clean it with. And people in the community would bring various cars, and all of the little young girls in the community would go in the kitchen with the women and learn how to cook and learn how to prepare a meal. And they would learn how to count money because they would sell the food that they make. So they were teaching us how to make a living for yourself with what you had. Okay. And we grew a garden. We had watermelon and cantaloupe from our garden, from our patch, and we had fig trees. And we would sell those figs, and we would sell those watermelons and cantaloupe every summer. Yeah, so it was about uplifting the community, really. And I didn't know that when I was a little girl. I was just like, oh, this is just what I have to do. You know, this is how I grew up. This is just what I was a part of. And essentially, he was raising me to be the woman that I am now without me knowing it. Plus, the music was there. So every day I was at church. Monday was prayer meeting. Tuesday was choir rehearsal. Wednesday was Bible study. Thursday was usher board meeting. Friday was deacon and deaconess meeting. Saturday was the car wash. Sunday was Sunday school. And after church on Sunday, we would have what is called children's hour. And it would be for 2 hours. For 1 hour, the adults would teach something, and the other hour, the children would teach something, or the children would play Bible drill. We would stand up, and we would salute and have our sword, which is the Bible, and we would turn to a verse. He would say, I don't know, Psalms 127 and verse 5, and he'd say, charge. And someone would raise their hand and say, there's no 157 Psalms. And then each team get a point. And at the end, whoever has the most points, that's the team who gets money or who gets to go on a field trip. And sometimes it would be young versus old, or sometimes it would be women versus men, or sometimes it would be the girls versus the boys, you know.
Wow.
And then he also took us on trips. Every summer we did vacation Bible school.
Oh, yes.
And we would go somewhere in the South. Yes. We would go to plantations, or we would go to African American history museums in different places. I remember going to Oklahoma. I remember going to Tennessee. Louisiana. We went to different places. We learned about jazz. We learned about reggae. We learned about Harriet Tubman, the Underground Railroad. Like, there was so much there for us to learn. And I really, really, really enjoyed my time growing up at that church because that was my education. I enjoyed school because it taught me how to be diverse. But that church was really my foundation for the woman that I am today.
Wow. That's a church that should be replicated everywhere. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
Not quite sure how to ask the question, but here we go. Aside from church, what is your connection to spirit and presentation of your music?
So in the way that I structured my life, in the way that I structured my vessel, I like to say that I am a vessel for the Creator. Everything that I do, everything, I am the divine nurturer. So I nurture my children. I nurture and heal the audiences that come to see me. So I have to also nurture myself, because if I'm not right, if I'm not healed, if I'm not open, if my mind is too cloudy or too clouded, I won't be able to deliver the message that I'm supposed to deliver. I'm devoted to my highest reality, and the reality is I'm a divine mother, but also a divine teacher. So in my music, I'm also teaching and nurturing. And that comes from the Creator. I just give up myself, my whole entire self, when I'm on this stage. I'm very vulnerable. Because I'm very open to all of the music. Whatever the musicians play, we kind of play and feel and vibe off of one another. Spiritually, I won't say that I'm religious, because I'm not religious. Even though I did grow up in the church, when I left the nest, when I left home, I started to see different things in New York. I grew up as a Baptist Christian. And when I got to New York, I started to see Yoruba priests,
yes,
and Ifa priests,
yes,
and Kemetic priests, and Moors, and Muslims. Mm-hmm. Different black communities, or Al-Kabula communities of our people, who were really excited about what they were doing, and Sankofa, getting back to the roots of where we started. And so I took on that divine journey. I started to read the Quran and started to understand why the woman was wearing the hijab and the man was wearing kufi, and why and how. I started to study some of the Moorish temple science and understand why the woman dressed the way she did and why she carried herself. I started to understand law a lot better, and linguistics in law, and etymology in law, and legal and law versus legal system and my art. You know, what is legal and what is law? You know, I started to understand that. And then I came into the comedic society, the comedic community, and learning to understand my art. And Austin, I said, and I saw and Herukuti, and the law of Herukuti, and Heteru, and Fatah, and Setesh, and Heru, and just understanding, and the Ankh, and life, and understanding who I am as a woman, and how to honor my sacred womb, and being a sacred woman, and what that means. So I am that I am. I'm everything, you know, when the Rastafarian community greets me, Wagwan, and, you know, bless up. Yes, I respect them, because they think that I'm Rastafarian. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the Muslim culture. Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum assalam. You know, I'm not going to not say peace be unto you just because, you know, there's a religious barrier. Same thing with everybody. I am that I am. I don't dismiss anybody. I'm open to the whole entire universe because we created all of these religions. So if I want to chant Nam Myoho Renge Kyo, I do it. I don't close the doors and windows of my spirit just because of what the world may justify as religion or whatever. I just practice everything because I am everything. Yeah. I am the happy woman. I am the woman who has been abused. I'm the woman who has been the single parent. I'm the woman who has been the married woman. I'm the musician who has been through anguish and pain from other musicians. I am the young woman coming from a foreign land into a place where there's many cultures. I am every woman, and I am that I am. So I just indulge in a little bit of everything. Yeah.
Oftentimes when I read about when you're explaining your purpose behind creating a social call and what that means for you, I often think of, after you're having said your understanding of these practices, I think of Oshun. One of the roads pretty much looks at Oshun as being a community gatherer. So oftentimes when I do see you, I feel the spirit of an Oshun, of that road. So, yeah, it was good to hear you.
Thanks.
Yeah. So you mentioned head coverings and the importance of knowing that in your dressing. You also shared with me that you make some of your outfits.
Yeah, most of them. Started making clothes because I got, my finances were in a bundle. As my mom used to say, my money is funny and my change is strange.
Yes. I've heard that.
You know, so I got to a point where I was like, all right, I'm going to stop giving random people my money because they're not giving it back to me. So I got to a point where I started making baby clothes. That was the first thing I said. I want to make something that my child wears. And I started making little onesies for the baby.
Okay.
And then I said, okay, I'm going to take this a little bit further. And I was being hired to play really high-end gigs, and I didn't have high-end money to buy gowns and things of that nature. And so I went to the Harlem Market, and I took pictures of different dresses that I really liked. And some of those dresses I bought, and some of them, I bought them and took them apart and put them back together to see if I could do it. And then that's how I started making my clothes. And I watched a bunch of YouTube tutorials.
All right.
And I started to make my own clothes. And I don't use patterns. This is why I don't make clothes for other people, because I don't use patterns. I just use myself and my measurements. You know, and I step in the clothes and try it on and take this together and sew that together and move that around. And then I get out of it and sew it back up. And, you know, I play with it, you know. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the clothes that I'm wearing these days, I make them myself. Like what I was wearing on the Tavis Smiley show and for my album release, I'm designing and creating and making these clothes. And sometimes I just sketch them out and send them to somebody else to make them because I don't have time to make them, which is what most of what I do sometimes now because my schedule is picking up and the tours are picking up a lot and, you know, a lot with the children.
Right.
So I just draw it out and create the croquis and send the croquis to a seamstress and she'll work it out and I'll go and pick it up and steal my work. I just didn't sew it together. Yeah.
Excellent. You're talking about the tours and increased scheduling. How do you manage that as a mother and single parent?
The children go on the road with me.
Okay.
Because even if I wasn't a musician, even if I had a job, I don't know, working anywhere, my children would be homeschooled. Because the indoctrination, I'm just not interested in having my children be indoctrinated a certain way, which is why we were speaking earlier. I said we don't have a TV because the programming, and I don't want that for them. I don't want that for any of the youth that I know. So I take the children on the road with me, and I have a sitter who comes and looks after them while I'm on the road. And the scheduling that I like to do is, for instance, I like to have little activities for them to do. So in the daytime, like for instance, when we went to Australia, we were there for 2 weeks almost, and we had them go to the zoo, and we had them go to museums.
Nice.
You know, if I was going out for sound check, we were also going out. We would drop the children off at the museum with the sitter just for a couple hours, and then I would go to sound check and do my sound check, and when the sound check was over, we would go and pick up the children from the museum so that they're not just sitting in the hotel room waiting for mommy to come back, not having activities, not doing things. So they go around the world and go to museums and zoos and things that, you know, little children they see. When we went to South Korea, they were able to see the little children there and Kamsahamnida, annyeonghaseyo.
Okay.
You know, speak to them and say little things, you know, learn little terms and see their culture. And they're small. They're young right now. So I don't know how much of that they're going to remember, but I have a lot of pictures and things like that. So it's difficult, but it's worth it because they bring me so much joy.
Sure.
I mean, the work that I'm getting now is because of them, because I have to provide for them. And I know that the Creator is moving me and allowing me to be in certain places because of my children.
Sure.
West of the moon, dear, east of
It's difficult, but it's worth the difficulty. There's not a day that goes by that I'm not happy because of them. There's not a day that goes by that if I'm in so much pain, I don't look at them and I don't have a smile. There's nothing like having those children. They just light up my whole entire universe, not just my day,
sure.
My whole entire universe. And I get to be their mother forever.
That's
and they're
it.
Going to love me no matter what. If I make a mistake and drop one of them for whatever reason, mm-hmm. I'm not going to do that. But
yeah, right.
You know, I'm just saying as an example.
Right.
The next 30 minutes, not even the next 30 minutes, the next second, they're going to be like, well, pick me up.
Yes.
I still love you.
Right.
Yeah, I still love you. You know, the world is going to, if you drop the world, they're going to condemn you and crucify you and whatever else, you know. These little girls are going to love me forever. And that love is indescribable. Mm-hmm. You can't get that. You can't buy that kind of love. You can't buy love, but you definitely can't buy that kind of love,
right.
You know. There's nothing like it. I don't even have words for it. But I'm very grateful. Because if I didn't have my children and my music, I don't know that I would be the woman that I am today. I would be very much so lost in the world.
So you brought them up. Tell me about your mother and your father.
My mother and my father are my biggest inspirations. My father can play every instrument known to man.
Wow.
He was the band leader and band director in high school and in college.
Oh, wow.
He is now the musical director of a prison in Abilene, Texas.
Wonderful.
He had a good upbringing, but some of the guys he was hanging with led him to drugs and things of that nature, and he is now in prison for that.
Oh, I see.
My mother is, she's still a gospel singer. She still sings all around Dallas, the Fort Worth area, DFW area. She sings with a group called 3D, which is directed by Elbert Taylor. It's like small group type of music, maybe like three sopranos, three altos, three tenors, three baritones, or two baritones. And the music is wonderful. She also does a little bit of acting as well. So my mom is, yeah, she's definitely how I learned to sing. I already could sing, but when I heard her sing, she gave me the confidence of doing it. She would sing at funerals and weddings, and I would be standing right there on the front pew watching her sing. And one day they said to me, Jazz, can you sing a song? Just get up in church and sing a song. And I was going to sing This Little Light of Mine. They kept asking me to sing This Little Light of Mine. There's this song, Miracles and Blessings, that my mother always sang. And I started to sing it, and everybody in the church cried because
oh,
I sounded
course.
Just like my mother.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was only 6 years old.
Wow.
I was only six. And I sounded just like my mother. And my mother cried for weeks because nobody knew I could sing like that. They just heard me singing, like, you know, This Little Light of Mine.
Right.
There's a bomb in Gilead, and you know, the little church songs.
Mm-hmm.
But when I actually sang an actual hymnal, they were revived by it. And that's when I really started to take music seriously.
Wonderful.
My first encounter with music was at age 9. I took 3 months of piano lessons, and I hated it, and I quit. When I started playing jazz in South Dallas at the Woodman Auditorium, which was a very famous jazz session that started in 1957 and went on until 1972. A lot of the white musicians and students from the University of North Texas would come and jam with us. And that form of integration was all right. You see what I'm saying? Which is the exact concept of a magnet school, where you put an attractive program in the way it works in Dallas. You put an attractive program in a historically black school, and you use that program as a magnet to bring about voluntary integration. I started teaching actually when I came out of the Army in 1967. I worked in the Dallas School District for 2 years as a substitute teacher, and I taught English in the Army for a year and a half. A great teacher can shape a person's whole life, you know. And I loved teaching. I loved getting up going to work every day, especially at Booker T. I started at Booker T quite by accident. A guitar teacher, Chuck Pangburn, who had been there for years, needed a sub for a couple of days because he had a gig in Houston. And I went and subbed for him illegally. The music cluster coordinator caught me and said, you're in the building illegally. You're not supposed to be here. But if you want a job here, come September, if you go through the proper application process, we'll give you a part-time job. And that was in 1997, and I stayed there for 16 years as a part-time instructor. I think teaching is the most honorable profession in the world. Behind every great person in every field, there's a teacher. Jazz is a fusion of European and African elements, African rhythm primarily, and European melody and harmony. And it's improvised rather than written out in advance. It's composition on the spur of the moment. In this particular trio, which consists of, it's the Jonathan Fisher trio that I play with at the Balcony Club. They are some of the best musicians in the city. Most of the time, I'll just start playing something. I may not even tell them what I'm going to play. And within seconds, they know what I'm going to play. And even if they don't know it, they can hear what I'm playing, and they just know what to play. And for me, the highest level of improvisation is continuous flow of melody. I'm constantly creating melody. When I'm at my very best, the music just takes over my body. A lot of it becomes subconscious. Because you're doing it right now, and people are listening, and they're taking the trip with you, and you don't want to disappoint. I try to put my best foot forward, so to speak. I'm reaching. I'm reaching for the sky. And Tennyson put it another way: hitch your wagon to a star, and you'll reach your port in safety. That is to say, you have to reach higher than what you ever hope to achieve. So I'm always reaching for the sky. Somewhere along the way, I hope I do something that's worthwhile.
Speaking of your instruction, tell me about pianist, instructor, and Dallas legend, Roger Boykin. What was the role that he played in your musical development?
He taught me about Shirley Horn and about Sarah Vaughan and how they played piano, and that it was really, 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 really important for me to learn how to play piano, even if it's just a little bit. He currently teaches guitar, piano, bass, the R&B ensemble at Booker T. Washington High School for the Performing and Visual Arts in Dallas, which is the Arts Magnet School. He's been teaching there for maybe 30 years, and he's the type of man who will invite you to his house and cook you something to eat, make sure you're good, and then teach you everything that he's got. Mm-hmm. And show you this record. He used to show me so many records of people who he used to play with. That's how I ended up meeting Melba Joyce, because Melba Joyce, my grandmother, Harriet Horn, the one who named me, and Roger Boykin, they all went to school together.
Oh, okay.
You know, they went to Lincoln and Booker T. Washington together. And then he taught at Booker T. Washington and taught me.
Oh, my gosh.
And here's the interesting thing. I didn't meet Mr. Boykin until after my grandmother passed away.
Oh, wow.
So what she was teaching me on the piano and things, I was learning, but I really wasn't receiving it because she was my grandmother. I was like, oh, yeah, I can learn that at church, whatever. I wasn't really taking her serious. But here's this man who went to high school and junior high school with this woman and knew her and saw her growing up. And then 30, 40 years later, this woman's grandchild comes to him. Of course he helps. Of course he does. Are you doing good in school? What's going on? Do you like your classes? Where you want to go to school? What do you want to do? Is this what you want to do? He makes sure that your well-being is there before he does anything else. He was that kind of guy. Kind of like a second father to me, really. He told me about Downbeat Student Awards. This man made sure that I recorded, because there were a couple of teachers who, at that school, they were kind of really mean to me, actually. There was one teacher in particular. That person had children who also went to that school, and that person's children was first and foremost before any of the students.
Oh, hate that.
And it was like favoritism type of thing. So there were different programs that a lot of the African students didn't know much about, like people of color. We didn't know about these opportunities. And that teacher was hiding some of those opportunities from me, like IAJE. I didn't know anything about that. The Young Grammys, Grammy in the School program, the Young Arts program. Mm. You know, this was an arts magnet school. So
right.
A lot of those things I didn't know about. Roger Boykin was like, nope. And Roger Boykin recorded He played piano for my first Downbeat Student Music Award was in 2008. I got Best Jazz Vocalist. I graduated in 2009, so it was 2008. I got Best High School Jazz Vocalist in America, in the nation.
Wow.
So it was really exciting. That was the first award I had ever won in my life for being a jazz musician. And I was really excited because of Roger Boykin, because of Mr. Boykin. He said, look, you're going to practice these five songs. What songs do you like? We practice Lush Life, we practice Easy to Love, and we practice Summertime. Just stuff that I could get used to because I didn't know who I was musically at the time. So, of course, Summertime, Nature Boy, those are like the go-to,
right.
You know.
Standards.
I'm not going to play those at a gig, but they're like, you know, the jazz standards that when you're getting started. So I played those. Roger Boykin saw my potential, and he saw my drive and my hungriness and everything. And for me, he just gave me that boost. And I'm really grateful for him. I'm really grateful for Mr. Boykin because I wouldn't have pursued jazz. He told me, your name is Jasmia Horn. You can't not sing jazz. You have to at least know the history and then decide later that this is not what you want to do. He gave me my foundation for this music. He taught me about Billy Strayhorn. He taught me that I needed to make sure that I learned piano so that I could play other people's charts, that I could play my own charts and write my own songs. It's important to know your own chords. And that message is just stuck with me, and I owe him.
Did he also give you a CD compilation of
vocalists?
Yeah.
He did. It had Etta Jones on it. It had Eddie Jefferson.
Wow.
It had Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers, Free for All. It had Sarah Vaughan, Shulia Bop. The first tune on the album was Shulia Bop, Sarah Vaughan, and the last tune was Free for All.
Nice.
And everything else. Oh, Little Jimmy Scott.
Oh!
Yeah, it had
wow.
so much. He was like, this is what you need to work on. Like, you need to hear all of these variations of different vocalists so that you can know where you come from
right.
and know where you want to go. Man, that man saved my life. He really did.
One, two. I remember you're the one who made my dreams come true a few kisses ago. I remember you're the one who said I love you too. I do, didn't you know? I remember too. Distant bells and stars like raindrops fell right out of the blue. When my life is through and the angels ask me to recall the thrill of them all, that's when I tell them I remember.
And feel the New York City blues. Ooh. Jam with some musicians, they'll make you feel fine and free. When you want to take a selfie, Times Square will pass the test. Go down to the mall, them folks will handle the rest. Oh, New York City, come on down and feel the New York City blues. Oh, New York, New York, New York, New York City.
Now, I've heard you really push your voice during live performances mm-hmm. when you're improvising. And some of those moments, those challenges that you take, make me kind of nervous. So what is it that you're doing to ensure that your voice will be as powerful as it is now in 20 years?
I don't eat things that are dead,
okay.
like a chicken or a cow. I don't indulge in those things. I try to eat live things mm-hmm. like fruits and vegetables. Then I try to consume them raw. I try not to cook them as much. I don't use butters, but I try not to use too much oils and things of that nature and like cook with them. You know, mm-hmm. I try to just use them naturally. I try to get a lot of rest. I try to exercise a lot. I love African dance. Actually, that was my minor in school.
Okay.
Was West African dance. So I do a lot of West African dancing with Nafisa in Harlem.
Nafisa, I understand you play percussion as well. You play djembe.
Yeah, I do play djembe. Mm-hmm.
I've actually played in her class, Nafisa's class.
Really?
Yes.
I kind of just go there and I kind of just like stay in my own little bubble. It's mostly for me to be able to receive some energy from other sacred sisters and other women, and also to learn about the culture. It's like a meditation for me. It's a way for me to get away from all this craziness that's going on in the jazz realm and just allow my spirit to be rejuvenated. And they don't know who I am. Like, they don't know that I'm a Grammy nominated jazz vocalist, and that's good. I don't need them to know that. I just want to go there and just be a part of a community that everybody just loves and accepts no matter. I don't want any attention on me, so I go there to kind of hide side.
Sure, of course.
You know what I mean? Like,
of course.
Yeah.
Time out.
I didn't know you knew Nafisa. That's beautiful.
Oh.
That's beautiful. And there's also the drum circle on Sundays in Central Park, and there's also the drum circle on Sundays in Prospect Park.
Yes.
With the Rastafarian community,
yes.
Which I love to go and be a part of. So, yeah, I take it all in. And it's been a great journey. It's been a beautiful, beautiful journey.
And that's going to help you preserve your voice for years to come.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't do alcohol and things like that either. Mm-hmm. I stay away from alcohol and drugs and reefer and, you know, all that stuff. I don't indulge in that either. I do take a lot of herbal supplements like spirulina and moringa, things like that.
Beautiful.
Yeah. In small doses. You know, I might have fish and butter, maybe some cheese, but not every day and not every week. You know, maybe like once a month or something like that.
Okay. A social call. It was part of your winning the 2015 Thelonious Monk competition.
Yes.
Is that a 3-release deal, the winning, or is it just the 1 recording?
Oh, it depends on what you want.
Okay.
Essentially, you're the artist, so you get to tell them what you want.
Oh.
For the competition, the stipulations were just 1 record. But because I'm now with the record company, you know, and I have a manager and a lawyer, I get to say, okay, if you'll have me for another year, I'll do 1 year or maybe 2 years, you know.
I see.
Or I'll do 2 more records for you, or I'll do 1 more record for you, you know. You kind of just go on your own terms if that's what you want.
Got it.
So it varies. But yes, I am working with Concord because of winning the Thelonious Monk vocal competition in 2015. Yeah, it's been beautiful.
/ Prestige. They revived their Prestige label?
They revived Prestige because of, well, I was the first artist. I don't want to say because of me.
Right, right.
I was the first artist for them to revive.
Right.
And now Jimison Ross is the second artist. They're just trying to be able to separate the jazz from the pop and also sell records.
Sure.
So it's also the history. They're trying to get back to the prestigious musicians that they had back in the day.
Right.
You know, like Miles Davis and John Coltrane were on Prestige.
Right.
Charlie Parker. They're trying to get back to that. So I'm honored, you know, that they revived Prestige, and I happen to be the first artist. That's beautiful. I'm excited about that.
Although I've read that you had a satisfying time working with Chris Dunn in the producer chair. Do you get to choose your next producer for your next release?
Yes, I do. And I'm still going to stick with Chris Dunn.
Okay. Okay.
Because he just, the chemistry is there. And that's important for me. It's like what I was saying about the musicians and their spirit. That's important for me.
Yes.
You know, because everything else will just come through. I really need the spirit to be there.
I actually appreciate your usage of scatting. It's not just some decorative ornament. It seems as though you're rooted in the tradition of scatting. It's not just lyric filler. So what is your feeling about that? And why was that something you decided to do?
Scatting is a language to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the day, talking about specifically Congo Square and when the prisoners of war, better known as slaves, were coming into various ports, Congo Square in New Orleans is one place where they could go and speak their languages and be free. And our languages were ripped and stripped from our tongues when we arrived here. Not all of us, because a lot of us were actually native to this land, but some of us when our ancestors were brought here. And when I'm scatting, it's my way of honoring those people, really, without even trying to, because it's my own language and I get to express myself in that language without anybody telling me not to. And then all of the people get to hear what I have to say. All of the people who came to listen to my concert, they get to hear what I have to say in my language.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say whatever I want to say, and whether it be good, bad, happy, sad, angry, mad, disgusted, joyed, balanced, whatever it is in that moment, it's going to be whatever it's going to be. And I think that's very beautiful. A lot of musicians try to improvise and sound like the voice, and that's where the improvisation came from. And I think it is a language, because you don't have to translate. Like this English language, a lot of the times I find myself trying to express what I want to say using a plethora of words in this language called English, the bastard language of German. And I speak other languages, and I sometimes feel the same way, not 100%. Like I speak Sotho, because my husband was from South Africa, and I speak Spanish, and I speak American Sign Language. And in those languages, especially American Sign Language and Sotho, I don't feel like I have to overproject what it is that I'm trying to say, like I'm doing right right now. Mm-hmm. You know, I can just say, when I'm scatting, I could just say one thing. It means a plethora of things. It's not a disguise. Like, for instance, in the English language, there's so many words that have dual meanings. When you're scatting, you mean what you say.
Right.
And you're speaking directly from your spirit. And you don't have to interpret because you're saying it. Like, mm-hmm. right now, even explaining it to you,
sure.
I have to use too many words.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
When I'm scatting, it's coming directly from my heart and from my soul.
Great.
And from my spirit. And that's healing for me. That is completely healing for me and for the people around me as well. I don't have to disguise what I'm saying. It's just, there it is. So I'm never going to stop scatting.
Excellent.
For as long as I can, I'm going to always improvise in that way.
Yippee! Yeah. Well, there are so many things I'd like to continue to talk to you about, but see, I'll have to wait until the next release because you got to get back to those lovely cherubs
yes.
in the other room.
Yes. And they're screaming at me like,
exactly.
Mommy, mommy, mommy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But thank you so much, Jasmia Horn, for spending the time with us, and good luck
Absolutely.
On the Grammy. Congratulations completely with regard to the nomination. That's saying a lot all by itself. All
thank
right.
you, Sister Joyce. Thank you so much. Sugar in my bowl. Peace and love to you.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as the roar. That the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Morning, find me moaning, 'cause of all the trouble I see. Life's a losing gamble to me. Cares and woes have got me moaning. Every evening, find me moaning. I'm alone and crying the blues. Yeah, but I'm so tired of paying these dues. Everybody knows I'm moaning. Lord, I spend many days and nights alone with my grief, but I pray, really and truly pray, somebody would come and bring me release. Every evening, I'm alone and crying the blues, I'm so tired of paying these dues, everybody knows I'm moaning.
You're listening to the closing moments of Sugar in My Bowl. My name's Joyce Jones. What you're listening to in the background is Lift Every Voice and Sing, Moanin' from Jasmia Horn's 2017 Prestige Records release, A Social Call. This is a 2018 Grammy-nominated recording for Best Jazz Vocal. Jasmia Horn on vocals, Victor Gould on piano, Ben Williams on acoustic bass, Jerome Jennings on drums and percussion, Kumba Frank Lacey on trombone, Stacy Dillard on tenor saxophone, and Josh Evans on trumpet. Before that, we heard West 4th Street Blues. This is from the NYC Improv project featuring Jasmia Horn and Nori Naraoka, N-A-R-A-O-K-A, from the compilation Melting Point. This is a 2015 MFA Records release. Jasmia Horn on vocals and Nori Naraoka on acoustic bass. Before that, we heard I Remember You from Jasmia Horn's A Social Call. Jasmia Horn on vocals, Victor Gould on piano, Ben Williams on acoustic bass, and Jerome Jennings on drums. Before that, we heard audio from a YouTube video of Dallas legend Roger Boykins. This was provided by the Dallas Morning News, and it was uploaded in 2016. Before that, we heard East of the Sun and West of the Moon from Jasmia Horn's A Social Call. Jasmia Horn on vocals, Victor Gould on piano, Ben Williams on acoustic bass, and Jerome Jennings on drums. Before that, we came out of our On the Bandstand segment and our station ID with Up Above My Head, Jasmia Horn from A Social Call. That's Jasmia Horn on vocals, Victor Gould on piano, Ben Williams on acoustic bass, Jerome Jennings on drums and percussion, Kaumba Frank Lacey on trombone, Stacy Dillard on tenor saxophone, and Josh Evans on trumpet. Stay tuned for La Nueva Alternativa. It is scheduled to come on next. Sugar in My Bowl will be back on February 4th with hopefully something you'll enjoy. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Stay tuned.
Every morning find me moaning, 'cause of all the trouble I see. Life's a losing gamble to me. Cares and woes have got me moaning. Every evening find me moaning. I'm alone and crying. So tired of pain. Everybody knows I'm moaning. Oh Lord, I spend many of days and nights alone in my grief. Lord, I spend many of days and nights alone in my grief. Lord, I spend many of days and nights alone in my
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.